I was so honored when Paul asked me to come and introduce our guest speaker, because he really is no guest speaker at all. This is more of a homecoming than it is a guest. Reverend David Leonard was a student with Kennedy Schultz. And if you don't know, you could be no dummy and be a student with Kennedy Schultz. It just did not work out. He received his training with us and then went to Huntsville, Alabama, to be the head of a wonderful spiritual community. Yes, I said Alabama. And he has an amazing, loving community in Huntsville. David has been so gracious. He's been many of our retreats. He's going to be at the one coming up in the fall. And I have witnessed him change people's lives. I'll give you a short example. A couple of years ago, I was helping him set up the room that he was going to be in. David likes to incorporate music in his workshops, and we were testing the music. And while we were doing that, just as we got started, all of a sudden, at the door of the room, a very well-dressed, angry man appeared. You could see steam coming from his starched collar. And he ran up to David, and he shook his fist, and he said, "You can't play that music here. I'm a lawyer from Atlanta. I'm conducting a very important seminar next door." David looked at him and said, "Well, I'm a Sufi from Alabama, and I'm conducting a seminar that will open people's minds and hearts to the love of God." The lawyer looked at him for a moment. His jaw dropped to his chin. He went to say something, but thought better of it, turned on his heels, and stormed out. Now, when you can shut up an Atlanta lawyer with one sentence, you're pretty powerful. So please welcome with me our dear friend, Reverend David Leonard.
They like to tell stories about you, don't they? Namaste. What a beautiful setup for me, coming home. Really, this is home for me. And I was one of the first cookies that Kennedy baked. He said, "The first batch you throw out." I was the second batch. And I used to sit here and sit there and sit there and sit there and sit there and sit there. And I can remember when I got my practitioner license, I was in the back of the room and my name was called, and I came running down the aisle, very dramatic, up on the stage, and you cheered. That was then when you knew me. Now you don't know me, but that's okay. So it's memories, and I come from show business, and I was hearing Barbara Streisand, memories like the corners of my mind, misty waters colored memories of the way we were. And that's what this is for me. It's a homecoming. It's nostalgic. And I loved it that you sang "One Power," and you sang about a power of love inside you and me. And then so beautifully, Ken read a saying from Ernest Holmes when he said, "Stop seeking and start finding what's already there." You know, I'm big on it's time to stop the search and start finding. The Bible says, "Seek and you shall find." Well, stop seeking. Find it. It's already right here. You knock, the door opens. Well, the door's been opening all along, so stop the knocking and start hearing. And that's what Ernest Holmes was saying in that beautiful saying, "It's already here." And you know how the universe works in such synchronistic, perfect ways. When you sang "The Glory of Love," when I lived in Manhattan, I worked for a music publishing company, and one of their big songs was "The Glory of Love." And I haven't heard that song since I left there 30 years ago. And you sing "The Glory of Love." You got to cry a little, laugh a little. You got to let your heart break open a little. So today I'm going to talk about the big taboo, love. Love. And, this teaching is about love and law. And sometimes we forget the love. And I'm kind of like a one-trick pony. I always talk about the same thing. And it's about this wisdom of the heart. That's what the Sufis, they say, pound the head into the heart. I believe Ernest Holmes was a Sufi. Jesus was a Sufi. They're just the lovers of God. And, you know, God is not a guy in the clouds. God is this presence that's everywhere available. And, you know, when Jesus says the kingdom is within you, well, the kingdom is the kingdom of love, and it's right there within you. And the sad thing is that we tend to project it outward, and we think the love is in that person or in that dog or in that whatever career, when really they're just an outpicturing of the very love that's within you and me, one power, and the power is love. So isn't it time we started discovering, as Dr. Ernest Holmes said, that which is already here, and it's waiting for our recognition? So the title of today's talk is Awakening the Heart of the World. What a big subject that is. That's all I talk about. I was just came back from the UK. They wanted me to speak at the first, well, this is really the third New Thought conference in the UK, and they said, what do you want to speak about? I want to speak about awakening the heart of the world. And he says, well, actually, you know, The Secrets has come to the UK, and it's very popular here, and we wanted to do a workshop on abundance, prosperity, so we were wanting you to tell them how they can use their consciousness to demonstrate a greater sense of livingness. I said, I can do that. I can do that. So then they says, give us some talks and give us some workshops and all you're going to do. So I did. And so a week before the conference, I get an email or a phone. I'm not sure what it was. He says, well, actually, we have vibrations to get the energy of the room going. And then we want you to do a two-hour workshop called The Game of Life and How to Play It. And after that, we want you to do a 45-minute talk on Stop the Struggle and Dance with Life. And then we want you to do a two-hour workshop on Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And after all of that's over, we'd like you to do a 45-minute talk on What's It All About? Put the pieces together for them. What do you say? I said, whatever. You know, whatever. I wanted to talk about awakening the heart of the world, so when they did the first whole morning series of talks by Dr. Roger Teal, who comes from the Mile High Church in Denver, they've got 20,000 members. And his title, they told him to talk about change your thinking, change your life, beyond the secret, how to demonstrate a greater sense of livingness. And he talked about mental equivalence and building a better, bigger container so you can receive more and all this sort of stuff. And once he was done with the whole morning presentation, David, you have 10 minutes to tell them what you're going to do. And so I went up on the stage and I said, well, now that you've been told how to get everything you want, let me tell you that there is no more to get because you already have what you're seeking. And so if you want to experience me in the workshop this afternoon on the game of life, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the wall down that holds us separate. And I'm going to invite you into a level of intimacy, into me see, where you can experience your resonance with the one that knows no other. And I said, this is the scariest thing in life, to take the wall down and to experience that intimacy. I said, it's more difficult than shooting a gun. You know, Rumi says, you know, the great Sufi poet Rumi, he says, there is a window in the heart. And when that window is open, he says, love can flow from heart to heart. But he said, if there's no wall between us, what need is there of a window? So the first key is to take the wall down and then open the heart and then experience this love. So I had 10 minutes, and right after that little intro to the workshop, this woman from the UK comes up and she's sobbing. Oh, it's just, you scared me so much that I know I have to take your workshop. Oh. It's okay. It's okay. We'll take the wall down. You'll be safe, you know. And she was safe. But, you know, she was a symptom of so many of us. We're afraid to take the wall down because we built it up to protect ourselves. We don't want to hurt again. And I understand that because I was the same way. You know, you give your heart when you're young and then somebody takes your heart and casts it aside and you're so hurt that you don't want to love again, that you're afraid to love again. And so then we go around this world protected. Can I trust that individual? I've done so much counseling, and a lot of people, what we really want, we just want love. But we then project the love. We think it's got to be in somebody out there. But really, it's all within ourselves. So today, I'm going to tell you some stories. And the reason I'm going to tell you stories is because when Jesus was preaching the gospel of love, he said, I speak, but they do not hear. So he said he told stories and parables, and in those stories, something perhaps can awaken. Now, you know, the title is Awakening the Heart of the World. This awakening is taking place all over the planet. And what's awakening isn't you and me. What's awakening is the love. The love is awakening. You can feel it. And in order for this love to awaken, something, the sleep has to go. We have to awaken from the sleep. You know, one of my favorite stories is the story of the Wizard of Oz, because it's so powerful in the simplicity of the message, that everyone there was looking for the very thing that they had already. You know, the Scarecrow had all the brains, and the Lion, he had all the courage. He was the one fighting for Dorothy. And the Tin Man was so loving that he would cry at the drop of a hat. He was so filled with love. He wanted the very thing that he embodied. And poor Dorothy, you know, she does this big quest so that she can go home, and she ends up foiled at the very end. All her spiritual mind treatment was for naught, and she gets to the... You know, even the damn balloon goes off in the air, and there she's standing, and she got the broom and everything. And Glenda comes. You know, she comes down that little bubble. I always loved Glenda. And so then, you know, what have you learned, Dorothy? You know, it's like Ernest Holmes says, you must make the great discovery for yourself. It doesn't matter what David's learned. It matters what have you learned. What have you learned? Well, I learned that if I go looking for my heart's desire, to never look any further than my own backyard. Remember hearing that? I kept saying, what? Huh? That's it. You already have it, you know? I mean, well, why didn't you tell me? Oh, the wrong person. Why didn't you tell me, she said. And then the best line is, because you wouldn't have believed me if I had. So you have to discover that the love that you're seeking is already there. It's waiting for you, but for some reason, we're afraid of it. So I have so much to share. There'll probably be two different talks today, and I want to talk about baby Speck, because this is my little dog. And you know how the universe is so synchronistic? It gives you everything you need in advance of your asking. You learn that in this teaching. So Kennedy used to say, you don't get what you want, you get what you need. Wow. You don't get what you want, you get what you expect. So what are we getting in life? You know, and the big question in this teaching is, what's in your consciousness? You know what's in your consciousness? It's what's hanging out all over you, all around you. That's what's in your consciousness. So look at your world. As within, so without. So when we get to take full responsibility for this life, it shows us where we're blocked or where we're in the flow, where we're receptive, whatever. Life is just such a beautiful gift. Someone gave me a book, a religious science staff minister wrote a book, and it's called Life Sucks. Just kidding, is the subtitle. And you know, they wanted me to create a workshop or a class around this, and I thought, if you think life sucks, it's because something in you has bought into the idea that it sucks. I remember in The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes quotes Moses, and I never did find this in the Bible, so I don't know where Ernest Holmes got this quote from, but he quotes Moses, and the quote from Moses through Ernest was, the word is in your mouth, a blessing or a curse according to how you use it. So if you go through life saying life sucks, the universe in its loving way says, yea, and verily, suck unto thee. You know, it does. It just gives you exactly what you put into it. And that's the law. And the law is so simple, you know. So the law is simple, but the love, boy, the love's the mystery. You know, I remember there's this song, what is this thing called love? This funny thing called love. Who can explain the mystery? Why has it made a fool of me? That's what it does. It makes a fool of you. And usually what we do with this love is we project it outward, and then we fall in love with them. And then if you're really lucky, they dump you because they're not the source of your love. And when people come up to me and say, oh, he left me or she left me, I say, good. You know, because you have projected that onto them. And really what they were there for was to awaken it within you. So we'll tell some stories about that awakening. The baby Speck story, she's my lover. She's my puppy. She's my dog. And I've been in a long-term relationship for 34 years. And in those 34 years, my partner and I have had many, many animals. There are children. And you know what it's like with your kids. And so when the last batch died off, the batch that we got here in Atlanta, and they got old, the geriatric, they seem to really live a long time with me, to where they can't walk, and I'm carrying them down the stairs, and we go through the euthanasia bit. And when the last three died, my partner said, that's it, no more. You know, I'm not dealing with that again. It hurts too much. And then you start logic. Your mind gets in the way, and you say, yeah, but I'm busy. And, you know, we have to find someone to take care of the dogs, and we want to go on trips. And now, you know, at a certain stage in life, you want your freedom. And so you rationalize why you're not going to do that again. And so I was childless for years. It was painful. And I said, can I even have a cat? Absolutely not. So we had a soiree at the house one Sunday after church, and here's how the universe works. It's so synchronistic. That Sunday, a woman came through the receiving line. I hugged her, and how are you? She was sad. Her cat had died. And she said, but you know, a psychic told me not to get another cat because your next cat will choose you. There's the seed. That night at the soiree, all the people were there at the party, and this mangy little cat was all over. And my partner was going, go home, go away, you know, nicely kind of nudging it. And the cat kept rubbing up, go away, you know. And I said, honey, honey, just be sweet, well, don't feed it. If you feed it, it'll stay. I said, but it looks starving. And so after everyone left and we're sitting down at the end of a party, you know how you do when you have that last glass of wine? This mangy little cat walks out again. She had a big smudge on her nose, and that's how Smudge came to stay. So Smudge moved in, and that was fine, but it wasn't enough for me. Smudge wanted, she wanted a partner. And Smudge would walk out by the street, and she loved dogs. She didn't care for other cats, but she wanted a dog. I said, honey, can we get a dog? And no, we can't get a dog, not until I retire, not until things are just perfect. So finally we got to the discussion of, well, maybe we could get a dog. Here's that mental equivalent thing. But we have to create the mental equivalent of the perfect dog. So the perfect dog cannot be a puppy, because puppies poop and pee and chew up everything. It's got to be a mature dog. But not a sick dog. Can't have problems like that, because we've had that. Dog's got to be short-haired, because long-haired dogs are too much problems. The dog cannot be a barker, because a barker can be a nuisance to the community. The dog must be mellow, zen-like, female, because males lift their legs. So it had to be the perfect dog. I said, I can do that. I can find the perfect dog. And you know, it never happens when you create such a huge mental equivalent. I mean, it's ridiculous. Me telling the universe what's right for me, isn't that a joke? You know, a woman came up to me, and she is a PhD doctor of this teaching, and she wants the right and perfect mate. She wants a man. But she says, I want a man who's sensitive, loving, sexy, intelligent, rich, fun, who doesn't drink or smoke and does the tango. I said, good luck. See, this is with this mental equivalent thing, which is so cockamamie for me. So anyway, this is the way the universe works. I was supposed to speak in Jamaica, and the plan was big, and there was going to be a big workshop, and hearts were going to open, and dancing on the beach. And right before the event was to happen, they canceled. And I had arranged for someone to come to Huntsville to speak. And so I said, what the heck? The universe is creating something new. So the person came to speak for me, and I went off to the mountains. And Tom said, come and visit and just relax. And I brought a friend with me, and we went up to the mountains, and there was this old dog up there. His name was Speck. And I said, why do you call him Speck, Tom? And he said, because he has speckles on his nose. I said, that's the dumbest name for a dog. But, you know, but every morning I would get up, and this old dog, he was like the dog of the holler. Tom said he was everybody's dog. And he would be there every morning, and he was the very dog that Trey had talked about. He was zen-like. He was quiet. He was wise. He was loyal. He was free. He wasn't a new. He was just magic. And every day I would go for walks, and there would be Speck walking with me. And so I said to Tom, I said, you know, I just want a dog just like Speck. I said, where can I find one? And he says, you can't find a dog like Speck. They don't make dogs like Speck. Speck's this unique individual, da-da-da-da-da-da. So here's how it works. It was a Sunday afternoon, and we're driving through Hiawassee, my friend from Huntsville, Tom and myself, and the friend and Tom say, let's go to the Humane Society. And I said, I don't want to go there. And I said, it's my vacation. You invited me over here, and I don't want to go there because it depresses me. My heart gets hurt when I see all these animals in the cage. And he said, David, you go there to give love. You don't go there because your feelings get hurt. And I said, I vote no. And Jody said, well, I vote yes. Tom said, I'm the tiebreaker. We're going. And so up the road we go. There's little paw prints on this road up to the top of the mountain. Sunday afternoon, my one Sunday off. We go there, and it's closed. I thought, see. Well, that never stops Tom. He knocks on the door, and he says, could we come in and love the dogs? They said, we're closed, sir. He says, well, we won't be long. We just want to send some love. And, you know, they were dumb enough to let us in. So the next thing you know, Tom goes in and Jody goes in, and I reluctantly drag my butt in. And there are all these cats in this room in cages. And I remembered what he said. So I just started going from one cage to the next, and I opened my heart. I took the wall down. I opened my heart, and they'd come up to the cage, and I just let the love flow. And I thought, you know, he's right. Once I got past this idea that I had to fix them or rescue them or save them, I could just let the love flow. So then Tom said, let's go into the puppy cages. I said, no, we're not doing the puppy cage. Oh, come on, David. He always lectures me. So I go in, and they're hosing the cages down, all the poops around there. I remember they're hosing it down, and these, you know, cement with these metal things, and the little dogs are yipping and yapping, and I'm looking at this, and I'm walking around, and the next thing I hear, oh, my God. God, he said, it's baby Speck. And there, sitting in this little cage, was this little tiny version of Papa Speck. She had the speckles on her nose. She had one ear flopped this way, one ear this way. She had the four white paws, the white tip on her tail. She was the spitting image of him, and she was zen-like. All the other dogs were barking. She's just sitting there. And so Tom jumped over the poop, he picked her up, and he threw her in my arms, and he said, you asked for it, and you got it. It's your demonstration. You have to take her. And Jody said, he's right, David. He's right. You have to take her. You asked for it, and you got it. And I'm just standing with my mouth open, and she just had her surgery. They just had spayed her. She was 12 weeks old. And I said, it's Sunday. We can't do this. Tom said, can this guy adopt this dog? And he said, well, you know, she's up for adoption today after, yeah, this is the day. And, well, if you got $80. And I had five 20s in my wallet. So I pulled it out. I gave the four 20s to him. And I'm walking out with baby Speck. And we're driving down the mountain. And I pulled out my cell phone and I called home. Hi, honey. Guess what? You didn't get a dog, did you? I said, oh, she's so sweet. And he said, she's not a puppy, is she? I said, well, I said, she's zen-like, short-haired, female. He loves her now. Yeah, but it takes courage. It takes great courage. And the universe, like Tom says, will one-up you every time. It'll give you exactly what you need. And so what I've learned with these animals is that they're here to open our heart. And it's not so that, you know, it's sweet to have the love that flows with baby Speck, and now we have baby Bert. Oh, let me do my favorite imitation before I I come home from class at night, and I'm exhausted, and they come running down the stairs. Now there's Bert and Speck. He's like a bulldog, and she's this little boxer mix, and they're big with white and dolls, you know. So I come down and I sit in the chair, and baby Speck has a toy box, but she's destroyed every one of her toys. But she sits there. So I go to the toy box and I pull out what's left of Santa, which is the hat. And I pull it out, and she goes like this. And she takes the hat in her mouth. Then Bert, he grabs the other side of the hat, and then you go, and then he goes, and she goes, So then I go back into the thing, and there's the duck, and all that's left is the neck, and I pull it out, and baby Speck goes, huh. Bert throws the hat and grabs the other side of the duck, and he goes, and then he goes, and she goes, and I do this, I'm shallow, what can I say? And it just keeps my heart open, and isn't that silly? I mean, this is my entertainment. I'm. It is sweet, and our heart is meant to be kept open, and whatever opens your heart, it's all perfect. You know, Barack Obama, you know, I'm so proud of Barack Obama. I just, oh, I think he's the second coming of... And when I was in the UK, the world looks upon us now with such awe. They look upon us with such awe. And, you know, when he spoke before the Egypt, in the college over there in Egypt, to the Muslim community, I don't know if you heard some of his talks, but he said things like, he said, I came here that we might have a new beginning. Wow. So let's let the past go. And then he says, Shalom Aleichem. He's speaking their language. Let's move into peace. And then the brilliance of this man, he quotes the Quran. And in that quote, it was, be conscious of God and always speak the truth. Is that not the most beautiful quote that you've ever heard? That's what a practitioner does. To be conscious of the wholeness of our being, of the oneness of it all, and always speak the truth. And then he gave this little line from the heart. He said, could we be willing to listen with our hearts even when we don't agree with each other? Wow. To listen with our hearts. So he was saying what I said. Let's take the wall down. Let's open the windows of our heart. Let's listen with our hearts. Shalom Aleichem. Always being conscious of God, knowing that this is a new beginning, and then speaking the truth. Let's speak the truth that we're all one. So let me do a closing treatment to align us with the awakened heart, if you will. Let's breathe into the love that's already here. And if it helps you, you might want to envision something that you deeply love. It could be your puppy, your cat, your friend, your whatever. And as you envision this being that you love, let the vision of them dissolve and sustain the feeling of love within you, the love that's always here. And know that we came here so that this love might awaken within the world. And as this love awakens within us, it's contagious. It contagions the world with itself because it's one love, it's one power, and it's in you and me. It's the glory of, it's the wonder of love. And it's right now revealing itself in its spiritual magnificence, awakening within us. And all we have to do is say, yes, I belong to you. Do with this life as you will. And in that surrender, we are carried by the love, to the love, through the love, as the love, with the love, wherever this divine presence would have us go and be revealed. This is the time. And we are the ones that we have been waiting for. So we bless this encounter. We bless this dance. It's so sweet. And as Dr. Holmes says, we let the love now lead the way and let the law make the way possible. With gratitude for all the love that already is, we know that it expands exponentially with every breath. As we place our attention on that which is real, that which is always here, that which will never leave us or forsake us, as we know how deeply we are loved. And in that yes, all is added unto us. With gratitude, I release this treatment in faith and in confidence that life unfolds perfectly, every breath, every step of the way. And so it is. Thank you.